Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hello and welcome to the Sidebar presented by True Crime Daily, taking you inside the courtrooms of high profile and notorious cases from across the country. I'm your host, Joshua Ritter. I'm a criminal defense lawyer based in Los Angeles and previously an LA County prosecutor for nearly a decade. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Joshua Ritter ESQ or at joshuaritter.com. We are recording this on Friday, December 1st. It's already December 2023. In this week's episode, a surprising move by an Idaho judge to allow live streaming cameras in the courtroom of Chad Daybell, in direct contrast to the trial of his wife, Doomsday mom Lori Vallow. Also, disgraced lawyer and convicted murderer Alex Murdaugh faced the many victims of his financial crimes as the former legal dynasty patriarch is sentenced after accepting a plea deal. But first, the racketeering case surrounding the record label and alleged criminal organization operated by rapper Young Thug. Today, we're very happy to be joined by Tracy Walder, a national security expert, News Nation contributor, and author of the phenomenal memoir, The Unexpected Spy. Tracy spent years working as a covert operative in the CIA's Counterterrorism Center. Tracy, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Oh, absolutely. I've been looking forward to it because I, first of all, watch you on News Nation. I always appreciate your insights, but I also appreciate you coming from a background primarily in law enforcement. You know, so many times on this show, we have people who are lawyers, criminal defense, prosecutors, but I appreciate the law enforcement aspect and experience, wealth of experience that you bring to this. So I know you've been following these cases closely as part of the work that you do. So let's just jump right in. First, out of Atlanta, Georgia, the RICO trial for Grammy award-winning rapper Young Thug is underway as the musician faces allegations related to co-founding of an alleged criminal gang. Young Thug, born Jeffrey Williams, was indicted along with over two dozen co-defendants, all associates of Williams' record label and collective called YSL. While Williams has maintained that YSL is an acronym for Young Stoner Life, prosecutors allege the moniker is tied to Young Slime Life, a Bloods-affiliated street gang in Atlanta. Though different defendants in the case faced varied charges, including murder, Williams has been directly charged with gun, drug, and gang crimes, along with violating Georgia's anti-racketeering law. Controversially, a focus of the trial will be the lyrics and music of Williams, which prosecutors will be allowed to use as evidence against the rapper at trial. However, the state maintains that this is not a trial about violent lyrics, but about the criminal enterprises which were endorsed and orchestrated under the guise of the label. The trial, which took nearly 10 months to seat a jury, which is just staggering to me, is expected to last months with potentially hundreds of witnesses. All right, Tracy, jump right in. First of all, my question to you is, how does this sit with you? This is new. This is not something that's done every day, where they take a so-called, you know, what's been described as a hip-hop collective being prosecuted essentially as a criminal street gang. Do you think this is the prosecution reaching too far, or is this a bold and necessary step in the right direction?
Well, I think this is interesting because part of how I sort of look at this case a little bit is when we look at Suge Knight and some of the things that he's currently incarcerated for, to include murder. At times, he was also running a criminal syndicate really under the guise of his music record label, right? And so it's not that this is unprecedented. So, you know, we've seen this before. But to me, the thing that's the most unprecedented, and I don't use the words always and never, is I have not personally seen a case where they're explicitly using lyrics, against them. And it's lyrics not to necessarily prove some kind of hit or, you know, assassination of someone. It's lyrics to really prove those RICO or racketeering charges, which I find fascinating.
Yeah. And I want to get into that RICO aspect of it and get your thoughts on that. But the lyrics thing is the part that a lot of people have been pointing to. In Los Angeles, for a long time, they had a, I don't know if it was a written rule or unwritten rule, but there was basically an understanding that you don't use these lyrics in a prosecution for a gang crime. And it wasn't so much the idea that that can't be useful or that the lyrics themselves can't be informative to a jury, but it was this idea that you're really pushing the boundaries of somebody's First Amendment rights, too, because lyrics are, you know, this is a performance. This is somebody putting on a persona, especially when you're talking about a genre like rap. They're going to be talking about committing crimes and other things in a glorified way because it's part of the art. Do you think that's the trouble they might run into here with the jury?
I do. And I think hopefully it's okay to say something a little controversial. But
please.
So I was an FBI agent, you know, also in LA as well. And these things would come up because there was a lot of gang activity in the area. But the interesting thing was it never occurred to us, and we were really never allowed to build cases based on lyrics, right? Some of them were definitely suggestive and shady, and it would be wonderful if we could. But to me, that's an indicator that the case might be a little bit weak. Because, you know, if you're looking, and that might be a controversial thing to say, but if that's what you're using, something that in my opinion is up to so much doubt, right? And so much of the defense then coming in and sort of rebutting that, in a racketeering case, really a lot of the evidence you have shouldn't be questionable like this. Racketeering cases, I don't want to say are slam dunks because that's not the right thing to say either, but typically those aren't built off of kind of what ifs and interpretations off of music. And so that maybe tells me that this might be a weak case, but I don't know. I'm just using my own hypothesis here.
No, I agree with you. It certainly, too, if that is a big part of their case, but if it's part of this kind of tapestry that they're building, trying to show that this, I mean, because it is a novel argument, and I think it's not an easy argument that they're trying to make, and they're trying to convince jurors that, yes, they did operate as a hip hop collective, whatever you want to call them. They were a group that produced albums, Grammy Award winning albums, but were they also operating in many of the same ways that a street gang operates? Did they have a common sign or color? Did they have a common sign or symbol? Did they, you know, share common colors? Did they use the same acronyms? Did they have a language, especially when it's connected to something like Bloods gangs? You know this from operating in Los Angeles. That's a huge gang that operates out here, and they have a very distinct language that they use, really. So if that's built into the way that the YSL, whatever you want to call that, a hip hop collective or a gang, operated, I can understand them wanting to prove that to a jury and including if that language was built into the lyrics. But I agree with you. There's a lot of opportunity for defense tomfoolery if they're relying too much on the lyrics, correct?
Well, and I also think too, this sounds technical, I don't mean it to you, there's other ways to collect that information, if you will. I have sat on so many wiretaps of, you know, MS-13 members who were ordering hits from jail, Bloods, Crips, you name it. And they do talk in code, and it's much easier to submit that as evidence. And it's difficult to poke holes in that when you have it obtained through digital methods, you know, voice call methods, whatever, than a song lyric, which in my opinion, someone could come to that and easily explain it away. And so, yes, they absolutely have their own language. It's very much like terrorist networks have their own language, right? They'll just pick up the phone and say, I'm an attack on this day. It doesn't work like that. But I think that there's better, more rock solid ways to collect that information, whether you have to, you know, sit on them in surveillance, whether you have digital methods, those kinds of things. I'm just surprised. And maybe they have other ways that they obtained it that we just don't, you know about yet. And that's fine. But I'm hoping that it's not kind of all hinging on lyrics.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. You referenced this a couple of times now, so I want to get your opinion. The idea that they're using RICO here, again, do you think that's a useful employment of that tool, or are you kind of surprised that they're using it, a racketeering case in this sense?
I'm not surprised that they're using it in this sense, if that makes any sense. Now, if you're just going after a gang, I typically don't see RICO charges in there. I usually will see that, you know, in mob stuff, but this is tied to a business, right? Theoretically, it's tied to a record label. And I could be wrong. I have to look up Suge Knight, but I thought that he was also wrapped up once on something like this. I could be wrong, but I think RICO makes sense if it's operating on under the auspices of a business. But if it was just street gangs, those kinds of things, no, we typically don't use it there. But again, we don't usually see trials regarding, you know, criminal gang syndicates, if you will.
Yeah. This is Georgia, where they have this RICO law that's on their state books, and they tend to use it fairly liberally down there. We know that they've applied it in some other cases that have been making the news recently as well. So we'll see how this turns out. I think it's an interesting case from a prosecutorial and just kind of, you know, legal banter perspective, because you don't see this, and it is a novel theory. And perhaps if this is successful, you might see it more often popping up around the country, especially in places like Los Angeles, where street gangs are such a huge problem.
Well, you're right, because we really don't see this charge popping up, you know, all over the U.S. And so I'm wondering if it will set some kind of a precedent, right, for folks in L.A., because we didn't use it a lot in going after street gangs in L.A. We just didn't.
No. I had never seen it used. Mm-hmm. And the lyrics aspect, too, if that ends up being a successful tool that they use in this case, it might change things, how they operate in gang prosecutions throughout the country. So we'll keep a close eye on it. It's an interesting case, and it sounds like it's going to go on for a very long time. If they took months to pick a jury, hundreds of witnesses. Yeah, we're going to be talking about this one for a while.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Calling all pop culture enthusiasts.
Are you obsessed with all things celebrity?
Do you live for the drama, the laughs, and the unexpected moments that unfold on social media?
Then you're going to want to tune in to the Comments by Celebs podcast.
Join us 3 times a week as we deep dive into every aspect of pop culture.
Whether it's dissecting the latest trends or just chatting about your favorite celebs, Comments by Celebs has you covered.
We have new episodes out every week. Follow and listen to Comments by Celebs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go to Walterboro, South Carolina, where a courtroom full of victims impacted by financial crimes committed by Alex Murdaugh faced the disgraced lawyer and convicted murderer in an emotional sentencing hearing last week. Murdaugh, who previously accepted a plea deal on 22 of 100 charges, was sentenced to 27 years per the plea, much to the dismay of victims and their family members. In a scheme lasting over 10 years, Murdaugh embezzled more than $12 million from his vulnerable clients, many of whom were victims of grave or fatal injuries. Murdaugh will be required to serve at least 23 years of the sentence under South Carolina law, which could be a contingency plan if the former lawyer's murder conviction is overturned amid allegations of jury tampering. When asked to acknowledge the sentence, Murdaugh briefly chuckled at the notion that he could eventually be paroled on the financial crimes if he behaves, quote unquote, before reiterating his apology to his victims. Many viewed the financial case against Murdaugh when charges all first came out. I'm saying when the story first broke and we knew that he had been implicated now in the murder of his wife and child, and that there were also these financial crimes. It was kind of like the financial crimes were the tail wagging the dog when it came to the murder charges. Now, we know there's a lot of problems with those murder charges. I am in the camp that believes that there are significant problems with that verdict holding up, and that they may be retrying that. Do you think that this plea carries some extra significance now as insurance for the government?
So being former law enforcement, you would think I would disagree with you on that. But I was on News Nation multiple times talking about the fact that I felt with the murder conviction, even before they announced that he was convicted and returned the verdict, I wasn't sure. There were a lot of issues with the collection of evidence, with SLED, and I mean, obviously other issues as well. And I agree that this could potentially, be retried. Obviously, you never want to come at a charge with being, this is an insurance policy if this other one doesn't stick. I don't think that was the intent. And I think when he chuckled, what is he, 55 or 58? I can't recall his age.
Yeah, late 50s.
I think he was chuckling because when they said, you could be paroled, if he has to serve a minimum of 23 years, he's not most likely going to survive that. And I think that's where that chuckle, although I think it was misperceived, probably came from. But yeah, I think these financial crimes, the fact that he took a deal, those are airtight. I mean, he wouldn't have pled if it wasn't airtight, in my opinion. So yes, this is offering a nice parachute, I guess, should those murder charges be retried or ultimately overturned. But yeah.
Yeah. It and maybe I'm overthinking this, but follow me for a second on this. It's funny to me, because if you're convicted of murder and you believe that you're not going anywhere for the rest of your life, what do you care about going to trial on financial crimes? There's a theory that you would think to yourself, let's go to trial. Let's give it a shot. I don't care. I've got nothing else to do. I'm sitting here in prison for the rest of my life. Maybe I get lucky and maybe I win some of this. There's also a theory of, hey, I'm sitting here for the rest of my life. I don't want to go to trial on this nonsense and have them double up time on me. And so I'll go ahead and accept a plea. But all of that kind of changes a little bit with this idea that he has a very real shot at a retrial. And it was funny to me that his attorneys went ahead and accepted this plea, which essentially does, like you said, put him in prison for the rest of his life. Do you think? Do you follow where I'm going? I don't even know if I have a point myself. Was there a strategy behind accepting this plea?
I definitely follow where you're going. But in my opinion, at least, you know, the white collar folks at the FBI, I can't speak for, you know, with the California state government. White collar cases take a long time to build, but they're almost always meticulously built, in my opinion. And they're almost always folks are convicted. I've always said that if the government has you on a white collar type of crime, you might as well just plead or take a plea. And so I think he was looking at the difference here between 30 years to potentially going to trial and having 100 plus years based on how many counts he was found guilty on. And so I think that that was their strategy. I personally feel that his defense probably knew that they had him and had him real good on those financial crimes. And I think that's why the murder, you know, ultimately went to trial, because in my opinion, there are holes in that case. And so I don't know if they had a strategy other than trying to get the least amount of a sentence as possible.
Yeah. I agree with you certainly about the white collar cases are usually locked up. They're very dry. They're very meticulous. They're not the most exciting thing to watch, but it's not like you're dealing with a bunch of people trying to make eyewitness identifications and reconstruct what took place. It's a matter of documents showing that money went from position A to position B, and it should not have done that. And as long as you can show that through the paperwork, they're pretty rock solid. So maybe you're right. Maybe they thought, listen, this is a good plea deal for you regardless. We'll try to deal with the murder case, but you got to take this in any case, because you're looking at a tremendous amount of time if you don't accept this deal. Could be right. It's not a horrible deal for him, even though I agree that the chances of him ever seeing the light of day again are very slim. Anyhow, we'll continue to watch that case, because I agree with you. And I do agree with you, too, that even without this juror misconduct issue, there was some stuff that took place in that trial that I thought we were going to be hearing about an appeal regardless.
Completely agree with you.
And so, yeah, depending on how you look at it, fortunately or unfortunately, I don't think that's the end of him for us for a while.
I totally agree. And I don't even look at the jury misconduct as, I mean, yes, it's a big deal, but I think that there's other issues as well. I don't think there's just that issue.
No, that case was, and it's not even so much the strength of the evidence as much as the way that the case was put on. And I don't want to get us too much on a tangent, but I agree with you that there was significant appealable issues that I think, in addition to this jury issue, we might be seeing at a later day. So we'll see, you know, more to come, folks. Let's finally turn to Fremont County, Idaho, where an Idaho judge has ruled in favor of live streaming the trial proceedings of Chad Daybell, the self-proclaimed prophet and husband of doomsday mom Lori Vallow. Daybell's defense initially filed a motion to include cameras, citing Daybell's family in Utah, who would not be able to see the trial without incurring financial hardship, as well as the need for open proceedings to maintain transparency. Prosecutors objected to the motion, arguing that cameras in the courtroom could unfairly prejudice jurors and create a circus-like atmosphere amid the proceedings. The judge ultimately ruled in favor of Daybell's defense. However, live streaming will be limited to courtroom-provided equipment, and no other cameras will be allowed throughout the duration of the trial. This is a complete 180 from the coverage of Lori Vallow's trial, in which cameras were banned and audio of the proceedings were released on a delayed schedule. Several other motions filed by Dave Bell's defense, including a change of venue request, as well as a motion to remove the possibility of the death penalty, will be ruled on at a later date before Dave Bell faces trial. All right. Tracy, for a moment, just put aside the strategy of why each side was asking for what they were asking for. I'm just curious, do you agree that judges should generally embrace more cameras in court, or is this turning what are sometimes very serious proceedings into more of a spectator sport? What are your just thoughts on that generally?
So again, I think people are going to be mad at me. This is my view is a little controversial. I actually like the idea of a singular camera or a singular feed in the courtroom. In my opinion, it does keep the open court and transparency that we are all entitled to, quite frankly. I have to be honest with you. I disagreed with the fact that Lori Vallow, did not, whether it was just the audio that was streaming. Now, when I think it becomes a circus is when we have every news group under the sun with their cameras there. I actually really think the idea of a singular camera trained in a singular direction, I think is very effective and a great way to maintain transparency. And this is really the same ruling that Judge made in the Koberger case, I think recently as well. It's a singular camera. So it sounds like Idaho is trying to maybe streamline some things, but the Lori Vallow case surprised me. I mean, one, no cameras, and two, you know, taking the death penalty off the table. So that whole case was interesting, but my stance on cameras is I really like the idea of a singular feed and then the networks being able to pick up that feed as they wish at a different location.
Yeah. I'm not torn, but I struggle with this a little bit because I agree that we have a transparent system. It's one of the things that makes this country great with our judicial system is that it is open. It's open for everybody to see how the sausage is made. And I think that's important. And I think that we should allow the public. We're now in a day and age where there's no denying the medium of choice is video. And so that should be allowed in. But I also believe that there is a strong argument that it does change the dynamic of things and the way people behave and the way that they act. I know this from personal experience. I've worked on a few cases where cameras were involved, and some of them were high profile cases that you expected them to be. And I had one case that I had no idea anyone had any interest in it. And there was a camera in courtroom every day, and it absolutely changed the dynamic of things. And so I do understand why the prosecution, they want to maintain that case. They don't want any problems, any difficulties. The defense, I think, just kind of wants trouble more than anything, maybe a little bit of stirring things up. What do you think?
I get what you're saying, and I get where the prosecution is coming from too, because I think the biggest issue that they're probably fighting against is juries, right? And it's sort of tainting them. What are they watching when they're going home at night, even though they're being told not to, right? Who's sending them things? And so, yeah, if I were a prosecutor, I would want to make sure all of that was buttoned up. I don't want a mistrial. I don't want an appeal. I don't want anything like that. And so I definitely get where they're coming from. And I like the idea of the defense trying to cause trouble.
Yeah.
I don't think that they are coming at it as a, you know, we should be transparent to the world. They have their ulterior motives as well, right? In terms of humanizing their client, all of those things.
Yeah. And not to interrupt you, but their argument that his family would have difficulty.
Yes,
I don't buy that at all.
I don't buy
they
that
just
at all.
Want the cameras in court. Yeah.
100%. They don't. I do not buy that argument in any way, shape or form, because there's other ways that they're, you know, his family could get access and that it was a financial hardship. So no, I think that argument is silly.
Yeah. I think that they, as much as it's going to create headache for the prosecution, they're probably thinking that any headache for the prosecution is a benefit to us in some way. And I do see your point that, listen, especially when you're talking about, you know, this is national news to us, and neither one of us live anywhere near Idaho, but can you imagine the way that it takes over Idaho and the local communities there? it's not, you know, it's being covered on their local news, their local paper, their everywhere you look, this trial is going to pop up somewhere, and it's going to be hard for those jurors to avoid all of that. No matter how many instructions they receive from the judge, and especially if it's all being videotaped. What about the idea that in her trial, a lot of people noticed the fact that the defense seemed to steer clear of any pointing of the fingers at Chad Daybell, at her husband, which seemed like an obvious built-in defense for her. And there's a lot of speculation that she was, you know, the one who was steering the ship as far as how that defense proceeded. Do you think that we'll see the same thing? And I know this is just asking you to speculate wildly, but do you think that his defense team is going to put up that same honorable way of ignoring her? Or are they going to throw her under the bus completely? She's already been convicted of this, by the way.
That is a really good and really hard question.
Good. Good. That's my job.
Seriously, that is a great question. I think because she's already been convicted, I mean, remember Chad hadn't been convicted, right? When she had gone on trial. They may throw her under the bus because truly, you know, she has nothing to lose. She already has her sentence. She's already been convicted. Door's been slammed behind her. So yeah, I think this could be part of their defense. I don't see any loss for them in terms of using that as their defense, but I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either, but I'm going to go one step even farther with the naked speculation on all of this and say that I think she has baptized herself in this belief. And the way that she both conducted herself during the trial, the comments that she made during sentencing, mm-hmm. I would not be shocked. She's still available as a witness to the defense, by the way, in his case. I would not be shocked if they call her, if he calls her to the stand in custody and says, I did this. He didn't do any of this. I freed these children. They, you know, were evil spirits and whatever other nonsense she wants to say. But why wouldn't she? She's already convicted. I'm saying that, and I could be completely wrong, but I would not be. This is a crazy enough case that it's the type of case where you might expect to see it.
I could absolutely see that. And you know what? A lot of people don't make a lot of talk about her sentencing comments. And I thought those were the most wild, quite frankly, out of a lot of the things that she has said and done. And so you're right. I have not thought about that point of view. And I especially think if the death penalty is not taken off the table in his case, which I don't know what's going to happen. I think they'll be more inclined to throw her under the bus and then I guess potentially use her as a witness, but she's pretty unpredictable.
Yeah. Yeah. If he's facing the death penalty, it's kind of like no holds barred at that mm-hmm. point. They would. Mm-hmm. Why not give it a shot at that point? Interesting. All right. Well, another case we're going to keep close watch on. This has been fantastic. This is our show for this week. Tracy, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find out more about you?
Well, thank you so much for having me. You can go to my Instagram at The Unexpected Spy or my TikTok at The Unexpected Spy or Twitter at Tracy_Walder.
Fantastic. And make sure to check out the book. I'm your host, Josh Ritter. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Joshua Ritter ESQ. You can find our sidebar episodes wherever you get your podcasts. And we want to hear from you. If you've got questions or comments you'd like us to address, tweet us your questions with the hashtag TCD Sidebar. And thank you for joining us at the True Crime Daily Sidebar.